Okay. So we had left off with this sugya of doing things before chakras and the shel shalom before chakras. And as we highlighted, that it seems to be there are some questions as to what the focus of this sugya. And we have a couple of passages in the Gemara, specifically in the Maseches Brachos. As we mentioned, the first parak in Daf Yud Aleph, there is the Gemara about the prohibition of eating before Shacharis, and the Gemara on Daf Hey Amid Beis, there is the reference of a Maila of Tefillah Samuch Lamita, which Rashi said refers to not doing anything, even learning before davening, and Tosfos challenged that. So here the Gemara talks about Shelah Shalom before davening, raising this question of, are these all expressions of the same idea, or are there different components? So here our Gemara focuses on the creation of a bama, making the other person into some type of alternative mizbeach. So it seems to be that the focus here is, as we mentioned, some svarim explain, that a person creates the impression that it's not a Kadosh Baruch Hu who is directing his success, but rather it's all the other steps that he may take in advancing his progress, which are important as well as the shtadlus, but this gives us the impression that this is the focus. The first thing he's got to do is he's got to give homage to this person, and he's got to go out and do his business first. And really, it's the other way around. And so Rashi, for example, commenting, we look at this Rashi yesterday, the Rashi in this pasuk, Chidlu lachem ena adam, says, Kishiyesh lachem lasok b'chvor hamakom, al tis'asku b'chvor adam. That when you have the possibility, when it's not that you have the possibility, but you have the obligation to engage and to involve yourself in the honor of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, so you should not rather involve yourself b'chvod adam, in the honor of a person. That's how we read the pasuk, that you should not divert the covet of God to the covet of a person. There is there are some modifications in the Rishonim, the question of what exactly were you talking about in terms of the nature of the greeting. Some of the Rishonim talk about specifically a very deferential greeting. Some also refer to the usage of the word shalom in the greeting, that shalom is considered to be shem Hashem. Maybe that's actually particularly offensive at that time, which is also interesting. The Gemara, again, in Brachos. Brachos is the topic, Brachos is the source of a lot of the themes here. We just mentioned three different places where the Gemara talks about pre-shacharis activities. But in terms of Shelah Shalom, the counterpoint here, so this is also a major topic within Brachos, because later on the Gemara is going to talk about this idea of Makdim Shalom L'Chavero in general, and Daf Yud Zayin. Now in the first parak, the Gemara talks about the idea of not refraining from returning somebody's greetings, and the Mishnah in the last parak talks about the idea of a takana to say Shem Hashem in greetings. Baruch Hava B'Shem Hashem, that they made a takana that one should be shol b'shalom chaveru b'shem. You should use Hashem's name in Sheil Shalom. And that's the whole question. First of all, when did this takana take place? Sounds like it takes place in the days of Boaz in Megillas Rus. There's some discussion about that, when exactly it dates back to. It's also a question, do we see people doing this anymore? So do we see that happening? It's a song, Baruch Hava B'Shem Hashem. We see people actually extending greetings using God's name. So some suggest that it is a reference to the usage of the word shalom. That shalom, the Gemara in Shabbos, which is not so far out of Brachos, Shabbos on Daf Yud, so the Gemara says that shalom is considered to be a Shem Hashem, that you should not say shalom in an unclean place, in a bathroom or the like. It's a little bit more of a challenge for Israelis, for sure, or also people named Shalom, because Shalom has the status of a Shem Hashem. That's why the Shach discusses that maybe you shouldn't even write out the word Shalom. Maybe you should, some people will write Shalom, you know, Shin Lamed Vav Chichik, because it has that status to it. So some suggest that you greet people with the word shalom, so that is the fulfillment of this takana of Shaila Shalom B'Shem, either because the word shalom, meaning God, has now become the greeting, or because we do it specifically as a way to try to fulfill this takana. Rabbi Svengel, in his Siyunim Lotori, he talks about these two possible understandings of what's going on. So some suggest that that's dafka a problem before Shacharis, that you use this word shalom, Hashem Hashem, and to then transfer that to a person before davening, maybe that's the issue. And a related point, some of the Rishonim focus on the usage of a different expression, such as good morning, Safra Tav, also helps to create an awareness that you haven't davened yet. The Rebbe talks about that, that maybe the idea is that we want to make sure that we don't forget to daven, and we don't get distracted, which, as we mentioned, is the other possible issue in doing things before davening. So maybe specifically using different language makes things better, makes things less problematic. Okay, so there are other issues to talk about in terms of this idea, but this is the general structure of what comes up. So let's go a little bit further. So the Gemara here, coming right afterwards, now the bottom of Yudalam and Aleph, has another passage which seems to be taking things in a different direction. It says the Gemara, Amar of Yonah, Amar of Zera, Kohalan Shivat Yamin Belo Cholam, Nikra Ra. Whoever lies, whoever sleeps for 7 days without a dream is called bad. Shenamar v'saveya yalin bal yipake ra, which the pasuk really means something else. It sounds like it means something else, that somebody who is full, somebody who is satiated with yirah shamayim, and he lies down after having filled himself with yirah shamayim, will not be visited by anything bad. That's how the pasuk would normally read. But here the Gemara says, Al Tikri Saveya Ela Sheva. That first word, we should read it to mean seven. And therefore, the whole pasuk really would be read differently. Vesheva Yalid is somebody who lies down for 7 days and is not visited. That is bad. So instead of reading it that somebody who is satisfied, or full with Yirah Shamayim, so to speak, and then lies down in that way, will not be visited by badness. We read it that if he lies for 7 days and is not visited, that is bad. So Al Tikri Sevela El Shava Amar V'Acha Breidu Rav Chia Bar Abba Hachi Amar Rav Chia Amar Rav Yochanan Kol Masbiya Atzmum De Beitar Rav Elon Eim Rav Asrana Sol B'Sur Yisro Shenamar Sevela Yalim Ba Yipaked Ra. Whoever fills himself up with De Beitar and lies down in such a state will not be the recipient of bad news. So that second reading is much closer to the pasuk itself, doesn't require anything to be reread, but the first reading really rewrites the words.
Bad news or bad dreams?
So, on which part? The second one or the first one? So the second one sounds like bad news, but the first one talks about dreams. Good dreams or bad dreams doesn't necessarily say. There is a very interesting sefer in Agadita, a contemporary sefer. It's called Divrosh Tzvi. It has fascinating comments and long essays on Agadita's in general. A lot of very interesting things there. So if you read it, where he talks about this passage, it's a couple of pages long. And he, the author of that sefer, he'll often go into general principles about figuring out agadatas and drushas like this, and he emphasizes that a drusha is all very meduyak, that you shouldn't assume that you have a word here like sheva, right? So you shouldn't say, well, why is it 7 days as opposed to 5 days or 10 days? Because the word was saveya, and it only works for sheva, so, you know, has it been we could have found a way to make it sound like five, it would have been five. We could have found a way to make it sound like ten, it would have been ten. But it's chas v'shalom, we shouldn't read it that way. We should assume that there is a very specific meaning to seven. It says, so what is this whole pasuk mean, and he goes in great detail to understanding just how psukim correlate to the various drushes that are associated with them. He says, so what's going on here? He says, first of all, okay, so you just asked, good dreams, bad dreams. He says, this probably is a reference to bad dreams, and that the idea is that you want to have bad dreams. Why do you want to have bad dreams? Because bad dreams are a corrective. Bad dreams will move you to tshuva. And we know that the Gemara says in the Maseches Tainis that there is a concept called a Tainis Chalom. That essentially there are two scenarios that we have when one fasts on Shabbos. We spoke a little bit about this earlier in the summer. We're talking about the Tisha B'Av not being observed on Shabbos. So for the most part, even very major fast days like that, like Tisha B'Av, they fall on Shabbos and not observed. But there are two scenarios where you do fast on Shabbos. The one scenario was in Kippur, so we had that this past year. But the other scenario, very different, is if a person has a bad dream. If a person wakes up in the morning and he realizes he had a bad dream the night before, so the Gemara says recommended that you fast that day. It's a good way to counter the effects of the dream. As the Gemara says, Yafa Tanya Slacholom Ke'ish Lana'oras, a person is going to fast, that will have the impact on a dream like fire through flax, the same way fire would tear through flax and leave a big hole. So a fast would have a similar effect on a dream. So you had a bad dream, you want to deal with it, so that's what you should do. So says the Gemara, even on Shabbos. Even if you woke up Friday, went to sleep Friday night, you woke up Shabbos morning, you realized you had such a bad dream, so you should fast immediately, even if it's Shabbos. And then the Gemara says that, you know, sometimes you have this attitude, like you went on a vacation, you had a good time, but it was so tiring, when you came back, you need to take a vacation from your vacation. So the Gemara has that similar expression, it has to be Yoshev, Tainis L'Taniso, that your Tainis was an effective act of tshuva, but you gotta do tshuva for the tshuva, you gotta do tshuva for the fast, because it wasn't right to fast on Shabbos, so you have to counteract that. But apparently it was an emergency, you had to do tshuva that day.
Like bringing a korban after your Naziris is over.
Which prompts the whole question of the nature of what the Naziris is about. Right? So here, if you assume that this was an act of tshuva, but it was an act of tshuva that itself was somewhat offensive, so you have to do tshuva for the tshuva, you have to have a tainus for the tainus. We didn't talk about this part, but the Mefarshim explain that the whole machayiv of eating on Shabbos is the concept of oneg. So a person should have a pleasant experience on Shabbos, so it's generally assumed that not eating, fasting, is inconsistent with having a pleasant atmosphere. You can't have a pleasant time if you're starving. So that itself is an inherent contradiction, unless you have this unique situation where a person is so frahitsky, he had such a bad dream, and he's convinced that it means something. So he's going to be miserable all Shabbos because of this. So the one way he'll feel a little bit better, if he does what Chazal have said, will counteract things, so that will make him feel a little bit better. So for this person in a unique situation, better he should fast rather than eat. That'll be more conducive to oneg. So you have this idea that a dream is sometimes perceived as some type of a message. And it's perceived sometimes as the Kodesh Baruch was saying that you have to set things straight. You have to correct the path. So somebody who is more susceptible to such messages, means he's more spiritually sensitive, he has more Yiras Shamayim, is more likely to respond to a bad dream. And he could also argue more likely to have a bad dream because the Kodesh Baruch Hu is communicating with him this way that he should set things straight. So in a sense, bad dream sounds like a bad thing to happen to you. Maybe it's really a good thing to happen to you. This is what tzaddikim get and what tzaddikim respond to. Is there have that type of sensitivity and that type of connection. So it's good to have dreams and bad dreams specifically, and it's bad to not have them, assuming that Dain Tzadik Ba'aretz Asher Yaseh Tov Le'Echta, everybody's going to need such a message. And somebody who doesn't get these messages, that itself is considered to be bad. So that's how he understands what's going on here, that if you're not getting a dafka, a bad dream, a literal wake-up call while you're in the middle of sleeping, if you're not getting such a message, so then that itself is worse than getting it. So that's the thrust of the drasha. So now again, so what about seven? Why are we emphasizing seven? And especially again, as you suggest, it's not random. It's not just that the word translates well into the seven, but seven is significant. So what would you say? What's the significance of 7 days specifically, as opposed to 3 days or 10 days or 12 days or 4 days? What do you think? So 7 days means it has to be that there was a Shabbos there. So Shabbos is a time we just alluded to when you are specifically receptive to spiritual messages. So if even over the course of a Shabbos you never get such a message, so then something's off. Or Shabbos especially is a time when you're going to be responsive. You notice there's halacha in terms of whether or not you can believe in Amaretz, who gives you an Amaretz in the halachic category. And that's the way you might insult someone today, but Amaretz, somebody who's not on the same level of trustworthiness in terms of Shumas and Maestras. So if he provides you with food, in question of whether you can believe him or not, if he says that it's Maestras has been taken. So the din is, on Shabbos, he's more likely to be telling you the truth. Because Shabbos, we're all on a heightened level of spiritual sensitivity, so even people who are not trustworthy during the week are more trustworthy on Shabbos. So too, Shabbos is a time when these messages are more profoundly received. So if a Shabbos is going to go by, even if it's still not being communicated to in this way, so then that's itself a greater statement. That's how we understand the seven is not some random number. It's a way of saying that if a Shabbos goes by and you have not yet received any type of corrective message, so then that itself is something to worry about. Unless you're perfect, which is also good. Okay. So that's perhaps what that passage is getting at. Next passage, so we all know the practice that's associated with it. So we've established that there are times when you can interrupt and that there's a greater tzad l'kula to interrupt in Kriyat Shema when it's Bein HaPrakim, when it's in between the paragraphs. So says the Gemara, Rav Yochanan Halachas Rav Yehuda, Da Amar Beinu Kechem Le'em B'Sviyatzev Lo Yafzik. That you should not interrupt between El Kechem and Emes. That's considered to be connected. So Amar Bavah, Rav Yochanan, my time of the Rav Yehuda, what's the Yehuda's reason? Tichsev, V'Hashem Elokeichem Emes, Hashem Elokeichem Emes. The Pasuk says God is true. The Pasuk in Yirmiyahu. So then the Gemara asks, okay, so fine, so you should make a sentence like that, Hashem Elokeichem Emes. So Chozer V'Omer Emes, so Einu Chozer. So once you've said Emes once, so should you now say it again because you're now being the second paragraph with Emes? Or should you only have one Emes connecting the two and let it serve double duty? So Amar Vaval, Amar Yochanan, Chozer, Omer Emes. The first opinion is that you do repeat Emes. And Rabba Omer, and we need to see a little letter here because we know this is what we do, La Halacha, is Eino Chozer, Omer Emes. As we know, we don't say the word Emes twice. We have one Emes serving as a bridge between the two sections. So Hahu Dinach is Kami de Rabba. So there was a person in front of Rabba. Shame Rabba. Rabba heard him. The Amar Emes Emes Trezimne.
I don't understand what's the case here.
That the question we say Hashem Elokeichem Emes. Right. So we want Emes to be connected to Hashem Elokeichem because of the idea of possible Hashem Elokim Emes. But Emes is really the part of the beginning of the next paragraph. Emes V'yatzev, Emes V'emunah, right? So the question is, maybe you should think, alright, fine, so only stick Emes onto the Hashem Elokeichem, but still let me now start again for the second paragraph with another phrasing of Emes.
But Hashem Elokeichem Emes is not what's written.
Correct. But okay, so we'll graft Emes into that pasuk because of Yirmiyah. You know, because of the idea of Hashem Elokim Emes, we'll graft Emes into the previous paragraph. But maybe still we should start the second paragraph with its own Emes. So that's the machlokus of the Gemara, and the halachal is, as we know it, not to do that, to just have the word Emes once. And in reference to that machlokus, the Gemara says there was once somebody in front of Rabba who did do it the other way, who said the word Emes twice. And Rabbi says, "Call MS MS Tafsilahai," that MS has taken hold of this person. This person is so focused on truth that he's been taken over. He says MS more than he has to.
It's interesting that Breuers, who has the Ashkenaz Frankfurt on Main Minog, when they conclude Kriyat Shema, the Chazan says, yells out, Emes. It's no one Shemukech.
The word Emes. It's interesting. So maybe that, I don't know if that necessarily tells us one way or another, but the idea, this way of kind of insulting somebody while couching it in praise, is basically saying that he's doing the wrong thing. Why is he doing the wrong thing? Because he's so seized with truth. He's so obsessed with emes that he says it so many times. Right? Like, I think it was the Shach who said on the Shlal, it was the Machlokas, how to count something, whether you count something as a mitzvah or not. And I think it was said about the Shlal. The Pasuk always kesef le'yisbe kesef, that somebody who loves money will never be satisfied with money. There's always a need for more money. Said about the Shlal, always mitzvahs le'yisbe mitzvahs. That he loves mitzvahs so much that if he counted something as a mitzvah, it isn't even a mitzvah. It's an expression of his overwhelming love for mitzvahs. He sees them where they aren't really there. So too here as well, this person loves emes so much that he feels the need to throw in extra emes. He throws in more truth than there actually is, so to speak. But that's not what we're told to do. We're told to go against the opinion of the Gemara. It's not Stam. And it's the opinion of Rabbi Bo. And the Rabbi Yochanan. So again, it's not nothing, but our practice is not that way. Our practice is just to say it once. So what does it mean to say you don't interrupt between Emes and Yatziv, between Elokechem and Emes? So what does that mean to say you don't interrupt? So it's a Machlokas Rishonim what that means. The Rashi and Ben Yonah talk about, you can see it two different ways, that the Mishnah established that there's two categories. Right? There's a category of being in the middle of a pasuk, and a category in the middle of a section or middle of a paragraph. And then there's a category of emsa haprakim, where you're in between the two paragraphs, and that has a more lenient status. We're more likely to allow you to interrupt in between the paragraphs. So you could legitimately ask, okay, so since we connect the third paragraph of Shema and the bracha afterwards, so since we connect the two, so let's say it's all one big paragraph. Maybe we should treat it not like Bein HaPrakim as it looks like, but we should treat it as Be'emtzah HaPasuk. Excuse me, Be'emtzah HaParak. We should treat it as you're in the middle of one long paragraph, which has a higher standard of stringency in terms of whether or not we'll allow you to interrupt. It's not impossible, it's just a different standard. That was the whole Machlokas in the Mishnah. Or, should we say, and this was a topic of Machlokas and the Rishonim, that maybe it's more than that. Maybe the Gemara here is saying something else. The Gemara is saying that your mama should not interrupt between those two. It's very important to create this continuity, Hashem Elokeichem Emes. And therefore, it's actually a stricter standard than anything else. That it's not just, it's all one paragraph, but it's more than that, that even though there are times when you can interrupt in the middle of the paragraph, this we should never break up. We shouldn't break the continuity between Elokeichem and Emes, even in the cases where you would have otherwise interrupted in the middle of a paragraph. So that itself is a debate among the Rishonim that Vilna Gaon talked about. This was a whole issue how to interpret what this means, lo yafsik. Do we see it just as well being one paragraph as opposed to the paragraph break that it looks like is there? Or should we say that it's even more than that, that this is a special din miyuchad, that you shouldn't interrupt at all, even the way you would normally in the middle of the paragraph?
It sounds like, almost like we shouldn't stop, wait for the chazan, like we should say the next paragraph, keep going.
Which is also what we do. When we finish, we say MS while we're waiting for him. So we do that, right? So we
say MS and we wait, right?
Right.
But so I'm saying it sounds like we should say the opposite and keep going. Because we've now taken the MS away from its paragraph.
Right. So
you can satisfy both, really, by just...
But continuing.
Flowing.
Right. That much we don't do, but right. we just make sure to keep those two words together. Right. So the Gemara maybe would have given you the impression that you should not break up Emes and Auna, or break up Emes and Yatziv. Maybe. But Gemara then goes on to say a little bit further. So it's interesting, you know, we talk about a good vort. Somebody tells you a great Dvar Torah. So this is the kind of thing you would see in that category. The Gemara says that Amar of Yosef, Kama Malia Hashmaisa. What a great vort I heard. What a great Dvar Torah. The Chiyasar of Shmuel Bar Yehuda Amar, Amri B'Marava, that when Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda came, he said that in Eretz Yisrael they have the practice. Now when they say Ma'ariv in Arvis, how do they say the third paragraph of Shema? Daber al b'nei Yisrael v'yamarta aleihem ani Hashem Elokeichem emes. They essentially skip the third paragraph. They just start it off and they go right to Hashem Elokeichem emes. So as we know, we talked about this a little bit, and the next passage the Gemara is going to get up to this discussion a little bit more, that the third paragraph, it seems like, even if we say, like the Rambam says, all three paragraphs are is that Kriya Shema, and even if you want to say the three paragraphs are all Manat Torah, but the third paragraph does seem to have a different focus than the other two, and it's mostly about Tzitzis. So Tzitzis is not observed at night. That's machlokus what that means. Right? That Tzitzis is excluded from night because of her isimo, so you can't see at night. So therefore, Tzitzis is not considered to apply at night. But what that means is machlokus Rishonim, whether that means nighttime bechlal is removed from the mitzvah Tzitzis, or whether it refers to ksus laila. That it's not about what time it is, it's about what kind of garments you're wearing. So if you're wearing nighttime clothes, so then you don't wear tzitzis, and you're wearing daytime clothes even at night, then you do wear tzitzis. So that is the debate among the Rishonim. So we generally are machmir for both, that if it's daytime or it's daytime clothing, so then it's you're obligated to wear tzitzis, or it's a minig to put on the extra garment that has tzitzis with it. There was a whole discussion. So most of us probably don't cut off the corners of our blankets, even though there were those who do. Used to do that. And the reason why the rest of us don't, so there's a couple of reasons why you might not cut off your blanket corners. There is a discussion that Rishonim have about four corners, whether four corners mean Dafka, that you have a garment that has two corners in the front and two corners in the back, like our contemporary Talis Kotten will have. Or even if it's on top of you in the way that all four corners are on top, like a blanket. But the general assumption is that a blanket is a ksus laila. It's a nighttime garment. Even if we see it as a garment, we see it as something you're wearing, but you wear it at night, so it's patur from tzitzis for that reason. Rabbi Sobolowski once pointed out that for the contemporary yeshiva guy, it's a serious suffix. That's really true. And that it's actually really mathematically the case. So let's say if you assume that, let's say if the sun comes up at 6, so let's say if you go to sleep at 5, and if you go to sleep at, let's say you go to sleep at 3 or 2, and you wake up
in the morning.
Right. Yeah, right. So let's say the sun comes up at 5 and you go to sleep at 2 and you wake up at 8, so it's 50-50. And you spent 3 hours asleep at night and 3 hours asleep during the daytime. And then if you take a nap during the day, so then you tilted the balance in favor of the day. So the average yeshiva guy schedule, maybe you could argue, it comes out that it's more social. So it's a quick question how exactly we should see things. But in any event, so at least in theory, so tzitzis is a daytime mitzvah. So this paragraph, you could argue, is really appropriate for the daytime, but we don't have to recite it at night. So it said here that in Eretz Yisrael, at that time, the practice was to really leave out that third paragraph at night. Let's just try to quickly read the end before we have to break for shachris. So Amar le Abaye responded, he wasn't so impressed. Says, "My Malyusa, what kind of a great Dvar Torah is that? That doesn't sound like a great word." Amar of Gehan Marav lo yaschil, he recommended you shouldn't say it at night at all, but you shouldn't start. V'im hischil gomer, if you start, then you have to finish. What's the mila that they started the third paragraph and then finished it? It's the worst of both worlds. Either skip it completely or don't even start it. So the chitayma, so maybe you respond, well, yeah, the amarat aleihem lo hevi haschala. That just because he says the amarat aleihem, that's not called starting. Because when you say, you should say the following, so that's outside of the actual content. That's the introduction to the content. So v'hamar Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak, amar Rav, daber al b'nei Yisrael, lo hevi haschala. V'amarat aleihem, hevi haschala. That don't we have the statement that, no, that's two introductory statements. Right? Speak to the Jews and say the following. So speak to the Jews, daber al b'nei Yisrael, that's not a haschala. V'amarat aleihem, that talk is already a haschala. That's the next stage. So amar papa kasavi marav, v'amarat aleihem, nami lo hevi haschala. So that's as well. They think differently. They think that v'amarat aleihem is not considered to be haschala. Ad amar v'asulahem sittus, until you get the actual content, and we say that you make sittus, so then that's really a haschala. Speak to them, say the following, all of that is part of the introduction. So amar abaye, so since we disagree about that point, so hilchach anan aschulem aschalinan, so we are considering ourselves to have started when we say them are delayed. So the kamas chali b'marava, that what they start, the way they start in Eretz Yisrael, the cave and das chalinan, and since we started, so migmar nami gamrinan. So now we feel obligated to say the whole paragraph once we got into it. The hamar of kahana rab liyatsum hiskel gomer, like in deference to this idea that maybe you shouldn't start, but once you start, you have to finish. So chia b'rav amar aniya shem lekechem tzarech lomar eves. If you say Ani Hashem Elokeichem, so then you have to say Emes. Lomar Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Eino Tzorech Lomar Emes. So if you don't start, then you don't have to say Emes to complete it. So if you're going to say that you could have left this whole third paragraph out, so we mentioned that it wasn't really about Sittas, but that the third paragraph was there because of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So Yetzias Mitzrayim is a mitzvah at night as well. So then why is that at all affected by the fact that Sittas is not relevant at night, but Yetzias Mitzrayim is relevant at night? There is a slight discussion that Chaschinuch has. Maybe nighttime is Rabbanan and daytime is Daraisa. But if we assume that Zechir Yetzias Mitzrayim should be said at night, so then how is that consistent with leaving out the third paragraph? So the Amar Hafi, maybe this was the practice to say as following, Modim anachnu lach Hashem Elokeinu. And that you should add this special phrasing which will allow you to make reference to Sechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim.
At which point did you say this?
Like I said, night, if you're going to leave out the third paragraph of Shema.
But not having to do with Shema, you said that separately.
You say Shema, and then you somehow also will say this paragraph at night to fulfill the mitzvah, to say the sentence at night to fulfill the mitzvah of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Okay, so we have, I guess, one day left. So we got willing on Friday, so we'll try to get as much possible accomplished in terms of going a little further tomorrow. Okay, everyone should have a wonderful weekend.